all of his friends, meet at a bar, so to speak, and brag about what he does, his great accomplishment in life. There's a degree of sickness there from my point of view. It's certainly a wasted life as I see it. Here the amateurs in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are trying to pass information back and forth about how to get the more use out of our antennas, transmission lines, transmitters, receivers, propagation, whatever, the 26 kinds of ham radio. We're trying to help each other. We're trying to educate each other. And he doesn't want that to take place. He's trying to stop it. What a foolish decision he's made for a lifetime goal, as I see it, to devote so many hours per day, for so many days and weeks and months and years to doing that. Oh, what a wasted life. Sad. When we finally find out with greater accuracy who it is, I guarantee there'll be some surprises. My goodness, I didn't think he would do that. There's going to be some of the answers. Alrighty. Let's give it a try and see if either Matt, KB2VBN, I think it is, or Wes N2XJN, let's see if they can get through. Either one, give it a try right now. K2RIW in the tech man.
XJN, 1234, 1234, am I coming through?
Yes, you are coming through, Wes. So I think we're, for the time being, we're hearing you, and give it a try, N2XJN. And what beautiful new YouTube and things like that have you found lately, Wes? N2XJN, K2RIW.
And well, one of the things from 3 days ago, it was a deliverer of the news of the article, which is signed by about 16 guys from Lawrence University. I'm sorry, from Livermore, and they claim. Officially that they reach over unity. And the article was waiting some time for approval, but finally 3 days ago it was approved, and more or less the article says that pure gain exceeding unity in an inertially confined fusion implosion was achieved. And to achieve it.
I think you're describing now the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory is one of the places where a lot of research is going on, trying to duplicate nuclear fusion. That is the main process going on in the center of the sun. Of all the nuclear reactions we know of, I believe that was the one that's known to be most energetic. Gives you the most amount of energy per gram of mass that you consume. And so, the inertial confinement technique of heavy hydrogen, can you achieve fusion with it? The fact that they're approaching or getting above unity is very attractive, very encouraging. There are lots of people predicting that our nuclear reactors for generating power in the future are going to be using the fusion process as opposed to the fission process. Another one of the YouTube videos you mailed us recently, Wes, is a very nice three-quarters of an hour interview of a lady giving a lecture about how to build a cyclotron, how she selected the materials, how she worried about whether or not she has enough vacuum, whether or not she's generating the right ion, whether or not she has the right kind of a detector, and so on. A very enthusiastic lady giving this lecture on the production of a cyclotron. I wonder if you have passed that one on to the Bernie West, the Dropbox, because that one is quite good, quite worth for your viewing. N2XJN, K2RIW, go ahead, Wes.
Yes, I did. Doesn't seem to... The material that was mailed to Chan was forwarded to Bernie's site. Well, there is a group of amateurs who are very much attracted to the psychotron. Actually, from the history of it, we have a very few devices that are pretty much promising in terms of energy or the isotope production. The circulators is that circulator does not have to have any radioactive material, but it might, because of the collision that create a medical supply of the radioactive material, a short living one. But not only that, I would be interested with the energy that is up. So we have a cyclotron where we have a source of an ion, and that source of an ion is not radioactive. It could be radioactive because you can speed up any particles you want, the part of the nuclei you want, but excluding a neutron. Neutron doesn't have a charge, it's not polarized, so by the token cannot be involved in the process. Imagine that we have a cooking pot, and the cooking pot is about 6 to 12 inches diameter, and we cover it with a top on it. But then the top of it has a seal, and we evacuate the air out of it. And then in the cooking pot, with no electronics whatsoever, just having a disc that is cut in half and has a little space in between those two halves, we are able to accelerate particles. So what we do is we actually they put the source of an ion, which could be a tungsten wire like a light bulb, and we put two wires out of it like in regular light bulb, and it goes out. Now, because we have a rule of the right hand, the magnetic field from the magnet that is placed on the top of the top and the magnet that is placed from the bottom of the top allows us to keep the circular motion of the particle. At the same time, we have the electric field that is at 90 degrees to the magnetic field. That is actually pushing the particles up. So what we're doing is we're creating a spiral path that is then creating a spiral and allows the particles to reach, in that cooking pot, a huge amount of the rotation before it is ready to go out. It could be in 6 inches apart, you could be able to reach about 300 feet of the acceleration. But if you want to, you can even go further. It's only how strong the magnets are. So in the commercial cyclotron, they don't use any longer the magnets, they use electromagnets. And now talking about other ways of accelerating, we have the LIGNAC. LIGNAC is linear accelerator, which is a straight line, and then you have a series of magnets, and you also have a sort of a partitions. So what is happening is, imagine that you have a pipe, whatever the length of the pipe is, 200 feet, 400 feet, or 5 miles, 18 miles, whatever. Now, in this tube, you put four of the dividers, every few inches whatsoever, you put four of the dividers, made out of copper. But those dividers are isolated from that tube, and they have a small hole in it. So what you're doing is you're creating a source of an electron, but you could have a source of protons as well, so any particles we want to. We are accelerating that particle using the electric field. The magnetic field keeps it in focus, but also we're going to have, instead of planar, we're going to have a helical rotation if we use four magnets orbit. And then those dividends that we have, one is plus, one is minus. So when we know that there is a neutral attraction of the particles of different charge, So we have a neutral electron. They tend to go to a plus, which is a positively charged dividend, like a small six with a hole in it. And it goes through. Once it goes through, the polarity of the plate change. Now the next one would be the positive, whatsoever, whatsoever. So we can, by simply changing in right time and right momentum, by changing the polarity of the different plates, we can accelerate the particle. The next step is synchrotron. So we have a cyclotron, which actually allows the particles to go in circular path. But then we have a synchrotron. And the synchrotron is, well, we have a large particle collider, and that synchrotron is actually requiring a huge relay phase. So the cyclotron is only the part of the big structure, then it goes to a bigger ring, and it goes to a bigger ring whatsoever. Now, coming back to that lady. Girl. That girl started in age 16 when she was, if I'm not mistaken, she was in the middle of nowhere. There was in a state of New York somewhere, I'm trying to get to that, it's a small college. And she was one of the kids, actually, involved in the group that was a scientific group in it. Actually, they have built their own cyclotron for the purpose of education. Amazing how Americans could go to get if they only want to. Although very much disappointing factor was that, if I remember correctly, in 15 years old competition, there was the last competition that happened. The United States of America was 36, beneath from Africans and Asian countries. Poland was one of the best, and the only one who beat Polish guys was Chinese. No wonder they have 1.5 billion people, they have people to choose. The big phenomenon of American science for American people is, if they create a team, this team is most likely the best of the best of the best. And that's what is good about it. But anyhow, coming back to the cyclotron. And to HCN. So, we have another situation where we're trying to find out, well, what if we want to play with something else than only the electron? How about we want to play with protons? It's an interesting situation because a proton is a little bit smaller than neutron, and proton is really very much an energetic particle. They do is they try to at first create a proton by itself. As you know, you have a nuclear bond and you cannot likely be able to remove the electrons, remove the presence of the neutron with the particle. And that's very much helpful if we understand that what we had last week discussion, what ion is. Well, the ion is unhappy atom. That atom that doesn't have even number of, let's say, electrons. It's charged. It simply represents as an overall particle something that is not neutral. So when this is true from two electrons, it becomes an ion. Also, we have an ion in the plasma. So when we have a hydrogen gun, a gas. And we have that cooking part. And in that cooking part, we have nothing else but just 2Ds, which is a 1D, 10½. What we do is, in the middle of it, we put the tungsten wire, but we also put the small tube, very small tube, that give us a supply of the natural hydrogen. And you gotta understand that in Hadron Collider, you have a one small bottle, like a small, what is it, 2 liter bottle of hydrogen. That's how much is required if you want to really play with it. So, since the nature of hydrogen gas supplies, the protons that will be accelerated, the hydrogen must undergo a process that will remove the electron and leave the positively charged proton behind. And that is being done fairly easy. Bombarding the hydrogen gas with the low energy electrons. And that could be done with that device made by that girl, who actually became a graduate, and she is right now in doctorate studies. She is in MIT. Imagine we have an American girl that built a cyclotron. Okay, so the hydrogen gas is bombarded with the low energy electrons. Located inside, close to the center of the top of the vacuum chamber. And the ion source is mounted on the face of sort of D, or the middle letter D. So that the tungsten filament is suspended between two electrical feeds through with the spring-loaded clamps of the tip. So when we put as little as a few amps of the car, we are able to completely glow the tungsten and create a temperature at which we would be able to create a thermionic emission, and this thermionic addition would give us ability to free out a proton. So the portion of the electrons emitted will pass vertically downward the bottom of the chamber, ionizing the hydrogen atoms present in the path, and the electron fields of the ion source and RF sweep will free the hydrogen electrons, leaving the massive proton behind. And that's how it is. And it's beautiful, because if we compare the mass of the proton, the mass of an electron, a proton is approximately 1,500 times bigger than an electron. So the nuclear physics could be so absolutely interesting. And when we were talking today about the antennas and slot antennas, I was really very much puzzled with that, because there is one statement that I want to make at the end of it before I let you, I'll be listening to your comment. The known fact is, if you do not evacuate that path, and you have the cyclotron the way that it is, and you put the radio wave, radio frequency in it, then the accelerated particles from the tungsten wire will collide with air particles, create any kind of radiation. So when I'm dealing right now with Coleman, and I'm trying to produce electricity, then what I understand is that I have a few factors. One of them is motion of particles. Whatever acceleration happened, it happened. But because of the motion of particles, we have our interaction on the particles created by the radio wave. So at first, what I'm trying to prove is, I'm trying to prove the fact that 300, 400 megahertz interacts with the matter, and if it interacts with the matter, and it is proven that we have a new chapter in physics. Because for whatever reason it is right now, the convenience of the people using the radio at this frequency whatsoever, or whatever the situation is, physics does not allow to believe that radio could interact with the matter. If it's interacting with the matter, then we're dealing with the very much harmful interference of the frequencies with the human body. And to appear.
Yeah, one of the things that fascinated me is I listened to the lady's lecture, I wish I knew her name, I guess you're saying she's now a doctoral student at MIT, and she made this cyclotron, and the cyclotron, with a strong local magnetic field, giving you the curved path of those particles. They go in and out of the positive D and the negative D, and you're putting either a square wave or an RF sine wave across the two halves of the D, and so thousands and thousands of times as the charged particle traverses that gap between the two Ds of the cyclotron, you're adding energy, and so after a large number of cycles, you can build up a lot of energy. And one of the things that amazed me, she mentioned that as you build those ions in the center, you get both positive and negative ions, and I think she said one of them is going to go around the cyclotron clockwise, and the other one's going to go around counterclockwise. My guess is, depending on how you tune the thing, only one of them really gets significant acceleration. And so that's a method by which you can produce charged particles at an extremely high relativistic velocity, nowhere near as much energy as the Large Hadron Collider. But at least for a laboratory experiment that is significant, that's being built with things that you and I can afford, that whole experiment of where she built that cyclotron, you and I can easily afford to do that. Well, I'm going to say you can afford to do that. You've got more money than I do. But it is very doable for an amateur. And so I guess some of the very early nuclear research, let me get out of here. Some of the very early nuclear research was done with that kind of a cyclotron. And eventually you discover you want more and more energy, so you can dig deeper and deeper into what's going on at the atomic level of individual atoms. I guess I slightly missed the point about she's got fermionic emission going on of a hot tungsten wire in the center, and she's also using a small orifice and putting gaseous hydrogen, I think it was, into the machine. And I guess I didn't quite understand, or I don't remember right now, how the fermionic emission of electrons, primarily, when you make fermionic emission, the majority of what leaves are electrons. There are some other ions, but I think there's very few of them by comparison. And how did she create the interaction between the fermionic emitted electrons and the hydrogen atoms so that she was able to make the charged particles, the protons, which I think is the main thing she was trying to accelerate. I believe she was trying to accelerate protons. Is that true, Wes? N2XJN, K2LIW?
The answer is very simple. When you're dealing with the particles of electrons, electrons are negatively charged. Then you're trying to extract the protons, and the protons are positively charged. So if you put in the same environment those two, and let's say, for easiness to understand, let's go now to the circular motion, or repeated not to go to the spiral motion or circular motion, just to go to the linear motion. Presumably we have that pipe that I explained that we have, and the pipe is in diameter, let's say, of 5 inches. And then we have, every so often, a few inches, we have a plate that is actually closing that pipe inside, with a small hole inside. But this plate is insulated from the pipe. And so we have a first plate, then we have 2 inches, and we have another plate, and then we have 2 inches and a half plate. The first interesting fact is, when we were talking about the slots, antennas, whatsoever, is we have a very much situation that is dealing with the cavity. And the cavity by itself has a very much particular frequency of resonance. And we know that if we're dealing with the resonance, we're dealing with the impedance of that resonance. So we can create, in the right condition, a situation in which that cavity will resonate. fact that we actually cut the glass of the light bulb and we have our tungsten wire. Now, the tungsten wire we put in some kind of vacuum envelope and connect to the tube, and tube is evacuated. Now we have a source of electrons. So, the electrons are negative. The first plate that is on its way is positively charged. So we have a positive. So imagine if you have a square wave, but you can have also the sine wave as well. The first plate with the hole in it is positively charged. So what it's going to give you is going to attract those electrons. But if, let's say, you have a string of protons, protons say, I don't care. But let's say the protons now see the negative charge plate. Now the protons say, hey, I like it. Thing is, when you were talking about those two parts of acceleration, I would say, if we right now put that electron in that beautiful tube that we have made with a hose, and we put the first dividing plate of the cavity as the negatively charged, the electrons go through and go through the hole. Now, immediately after this electron passed that hole, that plate change the polarity to negative, so the electron say, I don't care, it's negative. But the next one became positive, and the next one because of, we keep the tick. And because of the tick, remember when I was talking about the 15 years old girls pushing the car? The discussion between me, Glenn, and Eric, and you couldn't really very much understand, or maybe I wasn't really very much clear about it. There is a one very much significant thing. That's what is based on my research for the free energy. You have those 15 years old girls, and you have 15 of them, they push the regular car. After a few seconds, you need only two girls. After a certain time, you need one girl. After a certain period of time, you need one finger of one girl to sustain the losses, sustain the motion. But let's say you put to this car four people now. We have exactly the same situation. The only velocity changes. So when we have a particle is energy, and energy is particle. Mass is energy, and energy is mass. So when we speed up, we actually gain mass. That's what is happening with the particle. So coming back to the answer of that question, what did she do? We have two phenomena taking place at the same time in that cyclotron or in whatever the circular accelerator. We have a proton and we have an electron. Because we have one mechanism, if we properly apply the frequency to it, electrons will go one way and speed up one way, and protons will speed up the other way. Because once you have at one plate on the right, or at one attractive side, a plus, now electrons will go to the plus. But protons will say, no, we're not going to do it. But at the same time, you have a chain of reaction, you have a minus from the other side. So now, you're speeding up the protons the other way. And you see it.
She made it clear that you can accelerate many different kinds of particles, heavy ones, light ones, whatever. There was another lecture in that series given by a lady from England, which I think was labeled one of the four things you should never do with a particle accelerator. And putting your head in the beam was one of them, for instance, which a man did do. A man from Russia did put his head in the beam of a particle accelerator. And he said the reaction he had was to see a flash of light, which wasn't coming from his eyes. And one side of his face did become damaged, and the nerves no longer worked correctly on one side of his face. But I wonder if she was able to, with that cyclotron, to somehow select how many protons versus electrons, the ratio. Is there an experiment she can do where if she wants to be doing the experiment with only protons, and she can somehow eliminate the electrons from the cyclotron, the protons being 1,800 times heavier are going to have, I think, considerably more energy in that machine. The electrons, I think, are not going to... let me think about that. The electrons being lower in mass, but identical in charge, are not going to experience the same amount of centrifugal force. They're going to experience the same amount of force from the magnetic deflection, but because they're lower in mass, they can get up to a higher velocity before coming to the outside perimeter of the cyclotron.
Repeater, timeout.
I guess I'm slowly concluding that whether electrons get to their circular path going clockwise, get to the outside of the cyclotron, or the protons going counterclockwise, eventually get to the outside of the cyclotron, I'm beginning to think that the total amount of energy of either particle out at the perimeter could be similar. The electrons are lighter, but they're going to be moving faster because they experienced less centrifugal force, therefore, but the same amount of magnetic force of deflection. Therefore, they were able to go higher in velocity, faster through the machine, so to speak, before they got to the outer perimeter. And so, do you know of a way that she could bias the experiment so that one time she's doing the experiment, she has a preponderance of protons, and another time she has a preponderance of electrons? Is there a way that you can do that? I'm sure there must be. InterXJN, KQLIW.
Hey, Sontik. Well, at first, we're getting close to the collider. That means, what is the collision, and what is the collision needed for? In New Jersey, we have, right around the river, nearby the Newark, we have a university, very small one, then they have also the circulator. And in the state of New York, I'm trying to get that place where they have it. I had it somewhere. They have also that the circulator built. I cannot find it right. Oh, it's a HOUGHTON college. State College in the middle of nowhere. Halton College. There is no major road around that place, and it's probably about 20 streets altogether. And around that is the rural area. And this is a very, very nice place, and very nice college. Back to the subject. Okay, so we're dealing with a situation in which, at first, in order to deal with the protons, not with the ions, we need to strip protons from the electrons. It is being done by that hydrogen gas. We could create a deuterium or tritium, which would be the isotope of a hydrogen, and that is pretty easy to be done. But for us to understand how did they do that stripping from the electrons, to have just those protons alone ready for whatever action, is that they first supply to the ion source, which would be then our tungsten wire, the filament. They supply just a little of the hydrogen gas when we have a vacuum. What is happening is that filament is heated to glow white hot. And since the filament is completely isolated from the chamber ground, activity, it can be negatively biased with respect to the chamber grant causing thermionic emission to happen. So the portion of the emitted electrons was passed vertically, I would say, downward to the bottom of the chamber. That then will ionize the hydrogen atom. Those hydrogen atoms are present in the path. So the electric field of the ion source and accelerating RF sweep away the freed hydrogen electrons. Just put out. What we're going to have left over is massive proton behind. And then, when we go more into it, because of the very strong magnetic field parallel to desired electron path, the strong focusing is possible. And any electron that attempts to trail off the vertical ascent or descent is immediately stirred back towards the central axis of the motion. And due to the corrective focusing, the electrons tend to oscillate back and forth in the both X and Y, traveling downward in Z. We got to recall that the rule of the right hand. The centripetal force is being given by the two magnets, one on the top, one on the bottom. All we have in the middle is just a cooking pot with the 2D inside. Now, when we're talking about a circular motion, the circulator doesn't give us circular motion, it gives us spiral motion. When we're going to Hydro Collider, that thing is actually circular motion. So what they do is they're trying to speed up not really electrons one way and the protons the other way. What they're trying to do is they try to have two different directions for the same particle. They try to collide them on its own path. The similar situation we have with cyclotron when we can also do the collision. Let's say we have that spiral motion of the particles. Then we, at the end of this spiral, this particle has to go somewhere. So if there's two universities, what they did, colleges, and what they did is they actually put something like a phosphorus screen to see the collision. But when the collision happened, that's what happened is, because if we have the right material, we can create injection of that proton to the other...
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
We're adding the energy. When we're adding the energy, one proton can knock out 15 neutrons. Knock out from the matter. So what the scientists are trying to do is they are trying to see if there is a presence of any other periodic table elements that are not in the table. And if they were able to find at least 4 or 5 of them. Enter it here.
Are you fairly familiar, Wes, as to how she used that cyclotron? She was describing how good the vacuum has got to be so that you have the right mean free path so that the particles don't collide with air molecules so that their acceleration is more pure. And then I'm not quite sure what she was using as a target. So she was accelerating charged particles, I guess having them collide with a target, and then was she getting into analyzing the results of those collisions? It sounds to me like a large part of her project was selecting the materials to properly construct the cyclotron. And in the particular YouTube video I saw, I don't remember her giving much of a description as to how she set up the target and how she actually used the cyclotron. Over to you, Wes, N2XJN, K2RIW. And by the way, have you considered building a cyclotron? I think you have the wherewithal to do it. Over to you, Wes.
And the reason for that is that I cannot really go on the side of the subject just because I'm interested with it. I have all of this information. I'm going to give this information, but what actually was used in that project was alpha amplifier, ham radio amplifier. If I remember correctly, the frequency of operation was 7.08 of megahertz. So there was the frequency. Now, we go to the much more ham radio-like subject, we could say, what is the RF system that was used? We could consider that as a very, very similar structure. We have a generator, one coil, then we have another coil. The coil has more wind on it, so then we have a primary to the secondary ratio, and then that secondary coil is delivering much higher voltage to the D. And what it's doing is, it is how the particle is getting the kick. It's very easy to understand. You have one disc that is cut in half. In this cooking part, you have two halves. And two halves are isolated from each other. But actually, one half could be a part of the whole structure. So actually, you could have only one half. But let's say we have two halves. Now, what is happening, we put the positive on one D and negative on the other D. And what is happening is the particle is like the electron. It says, hey, it's positive over there. I'm going to go there. So when it goes there, now all of a sudden, it does have already this kick. The centripetal motion is delivered by the magnet from the top, and the particles then goes in the middle of nowhere. Hey, I'm here. I'm happy here. I don't want to go anywhere. But guess what? All of a sudden, the polarity of the other D was changed. Now the other D is positive. So this particle goes, oh, I'm going to go to D. It receives another kick. For us, it's important to just measure the velocity and the travel part of this particle. When this particle went from one D to another D in centripetal motion, and right now it's at the edge of the other D, now we're changing the polarity. Now we say that the other D is positive. Now, because of that gap, this particle acts like the capacitor. The two Ds acts like the capacitor. The particle goes to another D. That's how it happens. So eventually, we have the spiral motion. But the power amplifier ideology was decided upon. It's known the most stable and as well as the simplest to invoke. The system oscillates a driving frequency with great stability, even under low discharge conditions. There is a catch. But because the cyclotron tank circuit possess a high Q, we got to be very careful tuning because the tuning becomes a necessary when ensuring the maximum power delivery. Of course, we deal with the cavities. Cooking part is the cavity. So other oscillator systems we could use, but initially the commercial RF generator was intended to be used as the primary RF source. And the frequency could be, say, anywhere from few watts to 2.5 kilowatts at 50 ohms low. The generator operates at fixed frequency, could be 7 megahertz, could be 13.56, which is a very much commercial frequency. That commercial frequency is used for most of the study in this area. Other commercial plastic frequencies, so that would be the initial tuning and tank circuit preparation, we're dealing with the impedance matching to that particular cavity. Very frequency. So we actually could picture it as we have a one a small coil with a tree winds on it, say. And then we have, on the top of it, we have another coil that has, let's say, 20 winds with the very thick wire. Now, 3 to 5 or 3 to 6, now we have a ratio which is twice the voltage. So we need, for the purpose of the acceleration, higher voltage. That's what we do. Now, we use the RF amplifier for it, but we could drive that with regular laboratory generator. And of course, we're dealing with the Q factor, and the Q factor is that oscillator follows the very much simple rules. When we're dealing with the Q, which is the quantity of the oscillator, we would say about that, like Q equals delta E stored versus the delta E lost. So we're dealing with the E actually represents the energy. We're trying to create a, like in a regular antenna, the best match of the frequency to the particle cavity. That's why, whatever you say, think about dealing with the cavities or slot antennas is absolutely amazing for me because you are actually contributing to my study. Back to you.
You made it sound like to step up the voltage that goes into the D's, you have to use a step-up transformer with a certain number of turns in the primary and a certain number of turns in the secondary. That's one approach. There's another approach. An L network will do that for you. It turns out that if you build a resonant network, an LC resonant network, and depending how you feed it with another reactor, whether you tap up on the turns of the inductor of the LC network, or if you feed it with a carefully chosen capacitor, you can get a voltage step up depending on the Q of the circuit. If the circuit had a Q of 50, then the voltage on the circuit would be 50 times higher than the voltage that comes out of your signal generator. So there are lots of ways of stepping up voltage once you get proper impedance matching. And so that part could be done even easier than with the primary and secondary coil that you discussed. To your knowledge, did she go on after constructing this cyclotron? Did she prove that it was working correctly? And did it become part of a later experiment that became part of her studies? Is that what happened over the U.S. and 2XJN? Sounds like a very gifted lady, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yes, it is. Actually, what is happening is that she didn't intend to, for the particles to leave the cyclotron. What she did is, if we need to have a collision, we can have a collision. At the end of the spiral, when the part of the charged particles or the accelerated particles nearby the edge of it, she implemented a target. Normally, what is happening is at the one edge of it, at one particle place, you have something like a tube out. And then using electrostatic force, you're actually pushing those accelerated particles to go out of the cyclotron. When those particles go out of the cyclotron, they could hit the target. But what she did is she said, well, I don't want to play with it this way. How about if I put something on its way? Like let's say you have a flowing water from the faucet. Now you put your finger at 90 degrees to that, and the water is actually hitting your finger. So what is happening is you are actually creating a collision of the water molecules with your finger. So she said, okay, we have a particle. Particle speed up. Particle actually gained the mass. the more fast it is, it gains the mass. At the same time, what I'm trying to tell you, and I would love if you memorize that, the higher the speed it is, the lower the need it is for the compensation of the force that will allow the particle to keep the speed. It will want the particle to keep the speed. Not to go further, not to slow down, just keep the speed. That's what I said about the 15 years old girls. You can have four people in a car, or you can have eight people in a car, and still at a certain speed you will need only one finger of one girl to sustain the losses. Oh, coming back to the circulator. So she put at the nearby the edge of the vertical edge of the cooking pot, she put something like a finger across. So it will be in parallel to the bottom of and top of the cooking pot. She put that something that is actually standing or staying on the way of the particle, and the particle must collide with it. Now, that something that she put in, she covered with the phosphor. Now, that the easiest way to create the phosphor, you're taking a fluorescent light bulb, buying it in Home Depot, you're breaking that, and now you try to scrape that phosphor from inside of that fluorescent light bulb, and you have a powder. Now what you do is, you put that powder into the water, and then you put it on the piece of the glass, or whatever you want to, which could be a metal, and let it dry. That phosphor creates your phosphor screen. And what's happened is, when the particle heats that phosphor-plated electrode, or whatever it is, it creates a light photon. In other words, X-ray could be seen by phosphor and converted to the visible light photon. Actually, how the scintillators work. Scintillator crystal actually is something that it takes the radiation, that would be gamma radiation or X-ray radiation or invisible light variation that would be, let's say, ultraviolet as well, or that could be also something that is low in frequency than visible light, that would be the infrared, and change it to the micro explosion that could be seen then by photomultiplier. Photomultiplier is a very simple device. It takes one electron and amplifies to bunch of thousands of electrons many times due to diodes, and then you have a perfect picture visualization of that presence of that very powerful beam that was in the circulator. And to explain it.
So by way of the phosphor, she made a visualization of when the particles were striking. Okay, we've hit midnight. This was TechNet number 1494. Hang in there, you guys. The condition will slowly improve, in my opinion. I'm making some hardware changes. Eric is making some changes. And Rich is collecting data. We'll eventually make an improvement in the situation of the jamming that we experience. 73 you all, bye-bye for now. We'll be back next week and try to find out more about what Mother Nature is telling us. John, I'm going to turn it back over to you for some final comments. And keep those cards and letters going to John at the website of Juliet Bravo, number 5, Oscar at, I can't read my own writing.
It's AOL.
AOL.com. KC2WGB, K2LAW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Dick, first of all, there are three videos that she made, 1, 2, and 3, watch all three of them. She used a Faraday cup connected to an electrometer, and she was dealing with electrons, she didn't deal with protons. The emissions from the thermionic device, and that's what she was accelerating. Maybe you want to review it again, and I think that's what you're going to find.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Okay.
Repeater. Time out. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
The log. Bye-bye, you all. See you down the log. K2RAW clear.
Good night, Dick. Thank you. KC2WGB clear.
I believe John is right, because I have in mind her experiment and the experiment of two other guys from New Jersey and from other. So I might have confused myself, but definitely the subject is fascinating. Thank you very much and for you guys to listen to that. John, you want to go upstairs?
You want to go to Metro or you want to go to 147? Okay, meet you at Metro. KC2WGB, QSY.
CB3EHB, WB3EHB, WCGTV. Clint, are you listening? 2GTV listening.